Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Good evening, Bahamas. This is Urologist Speaks with Bahamian urologist Dr. Gregory Pinto. I am pleased to have in the studio my co-host this evening is Mr. Calvin Green here again. Thank you, Mr. Green.
Thank you, Doc. Thank you for having me.
Mr. Calvin Green is a very avid youth leader, also a leader in the men's church at St. Francis Xavier Catholic Cathedral. He's also a veteran of our tourism and hotel industry as well. He's also involved in Junkanoo, Advid Junkanoo as well, and part of the... What is your title, sir, in Junkanoo?
Well, I was the vice chairman for the parade management team.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so this is June. June has come yet again, and June is annually... worldwide recognized as Men's Health Awareness. We always try to advocate men's health on this show. Obviously, we speak about women's health and health of the nation, health of the children, whether that's physical, spiritual, emotional, psychological. But we're going to concentrate today and try to answer all the questions we can. I think Calvin's going to be an advocate for men and try to pick my brain in terms of what men are dying to ask as they get older. No question is a foolish question, and there's no need for any embarrassment. So the health of the nation, as we know, is the wealth of the nation. Here we're trying to promote preventative medicine. We're trying to be proactive. We're trying to address every facet of our society. So obviously we're a very unhealthy nation. It's a sombering speech that I have to start with, but we are one of the most obese nations in the world. Starting even from childhood obesity, at least 1 in 4 of our young children are obese. We have a very high rate of diabetes. As many as 1 in 6 of us are either diabetic or pre-diabetic as adults. We have a very unhealthy lifestyle, particularly in New Province, Grand Bahama. We have a very sedentary lifestyle. We don't exercise. We don't walk anywhere. Everywhere we drive. But we need to talk about other things that are underneath the surface, not just the physical. We can have the most perfect physical specimen, but if we live in a society that's plagued by tyranny of corruption and crime, where we're afraid to live or to venture outside our homes or even live within our homes, that's no way of living either. That's a very unhealthy way of living. So we have an overwhelming number of persons, men and women, but we're going to talk about men, who live with apathy, who live with anger, despair, depression, men who are chronically stressed, living with post-traumatic stress disorders, who are chronically sleep-deprived, men who are essentially functionally depressed, are one incident or one tragedy away from completely breaking apart. We have too many of our men who, of all ages, who are living not just week to week, but day to day, paycheck to paycheck, overwhelmed by the pressures of bills and family that they need to support. So where are we going to start, Mr. Calvin Green? We have a very unhealthy nation. We want to address in a positive way with solutions as many things as possible.
So what I will start with, Doc, is since this is Men's Health Month, and as a man and a civilian because I'm not a doctor, I have to do my part in coercing and getting men to check their health. And I know, for example, for me at my age, I used to take my health for granted. Now, whatever aches me and pains me at my age, now I want to know what's happening. And so I am. I visit the doctor quite often for my checkups. And so I want to be an advocate and to really, really impress upon the Bahamian men that they need to at least visit their doctor once a year. They have to continuously check their prostate. For me, being a survivor of that, I check mine all the time just to make sure that the PSA level is good. And so I really want to begin with encouraging men, seeing that this is men's health month, to please, please go and see the doctor, do your checkup, your yearly checkup, and also continuously check on the prostate.
Well, it's important that you said that in terms of men are very, very stubborn. A lot of it has to do with, unfortunately, ignorance. It has to do with fear of the unknown, or they believe that if they are not aware of it, then it doesn't exist, which is very foolhardy. But the danger is that what lies beneath, because there's so many destructive disorders, diseases, that have little to no symptoms in the early stages. And only when it becomes the nth degree, where there becomes irreversible damage to, in some cases, multiple organs, where you're going to basically start to have symptoms. Prostate cancer is one of those diseases. It has no symptoms or very little symptoms when it's at an early stage. So if you're waiting for symptoms, then you're going to wait till it's too late. Heart disease is another one. Hypertension. Everybody knows hypertension is a silent killer. If you're not going to check your blood pressure, you're not going to have really any symptoms of elevated blood pressure, uncontrolled hypertension, unless you go into a physician's office, have a nurse or physician check your blood pressure. And then even then, you're not going to diagnose hypertension on one isolated value. So you need to see your physician multiple times. Diabetes, again, you're going to have little to no symptoms until it's too late. That's the importance of having annual physicals, having routine blood, so that we can pick up any discrepancy in those blood results. Even if the blood results are normal, if there's a elevation in one value from one year to the next, that may require further investigation or testing or questioning to determine if something is awry. So we have an overwhelming number of diabetics. It's shocking, the statistic, as many as 1 in 4 persons with diabetes has some form of chronic kidney disease. Sorry, go ahead, Mr. Green.
No, I was just going to ask you, Doc, as an advocate for the civilians, I mean, when they come to see you, some of the questions that they should be asking you is, if they have any symptom, what is causing my symptom?
Yes.
What is causing my symptom?
Just because you have urinary symptoms doesn't mean that you have a related prostate issue, whether it's benign disease or cancer. There are many reasons for you having urinary issues. And a lot of men are not aware of what is normal. So they believe, or it becomes part of their normal, the abnormal becomes the normal, waking up 6 times in the night to urinate, living with a bucket by the side of the bed, creating a makeshift, and there are a lot of creative men in this society, particularly taxi drivers, creative cartons where they can put their male member in because they can't even pull over to the side to urinate. They got to basically urinate right there, right then when they're driving. That's taking away your dignity. That's no way to live, and that's not how anyone should be living. Men who are stopping drinking any liquids at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, 5 p.m., because if they know they drink normally even up until 8 o'clock and they go to bed at 10, they'll be waking up 8 times in the night to urinate. Men who avoid traffic because they know if they drink anything, they're not going to make it in traffic because they essentially have to urinate every 30 minutes. Again, creating a chronic state of dehydration is going to cause a lot of ailments for you, including for your heart and for your kidneys as well. A lot of men said, Doc, I have no problem. I only pee once a day. That in itself is a problem. It's a problem in possibly in the production of urine. It's also a problem in possibly in your volume of intake. It may be related to early chronic renal failure, may be related to chronic urinary retention where it's become so bad where you have a bladder that's almost insensate where you have no bladder filling sensation. So you walk around with a bladder that's four times normal size and capacity holding urine like a camel holds water and you just have no urge to pee whatsoever. And you're never actually urinating. You're just overflowing. And that little weak flow that's overflowing because the bladder has no further volume to contain that urine becomes their normal and they believe that they're urinating. Or men that have to sit to urinate because they have to have so much in the way of intra-abdominal pressure to be able to even generate a very weak urinary stream. Again, that is a problem. Men who, even when they're not even constipated, but when they're passing stool, unknowingly, that bearing down of passing stool causes you to overflow urine that you didn't even know was there because you just peed 10 minutes ago. Again, that's a sign of chronic incomplete bladder emptying where you're holding on to urine all the time. Again, a concerning feature. If you feel when you're going in your 40s and your 50s and you feel like every time you change your underwear, it's damp with urine. Again, a problem. You have post-void dribbling where you think you've emptied, you walk away from the toilet and you continue to dribble away. Or you don't make it in time. You have that severe urge to urinate and you don't make it to the toilet in time. You have urge urinary incontinence. Again, no one should have to live like that and that's a sign that something's going wrong. You need that 7 hours of a good sleep if you want to have longevity. If you want to live until your 80s, you need to have that 7 hours of good sleep for your cardiovascular health. If you're going to be waking up innumerable number of times to urinate, that's going to create havoc on your health in so many ways. That's going to create havoc on your marriage because you're waking up your wife all the time. And one of the greatest tragedies that I see as a urologist is men who are elderly. They already have issues with osteoporosis where they have brittle bones and they fall. And they were doing pretty well. Maybe they're 85 years old and that's one fall where they have a fracture of their femur or their thigh bone or they have a fracture of their hip and they're basically take another year to get back on track in terms of mobility and everything else, going through one or two surgeries, losing a considerable amount of weight and everything else. And that becomes the beginning of the end. That can be the means where they could have potentially lived another 10 years and they're only going to live another year because of that traumatic fall where they have a traumatic fracture. So even for men who at the time where they usually wake up a lot in the night to urinate, that's when it's most dangerous because usually they're not have their full cognition, they're very groggy, they don't have the best in way of eyesight, they don't want to put on the light to further aggravate their wife, and they're going to oftentimes fall or trip, hit their head, blunt head trauma, blunt abdominal trauma. I've seen it all. I've seen men even in their 50s. I've seen an individual, and I've spoken to him about mentioning this, obviously his history and his personal tragedy is his own, but just in terms of an alert to men out there. He went to urinate. He had traveled that day. He had a suitcase on the ground. He tripped on that suitcase, went head first into the wall, quadriplegic in his early 50s, quadriplegic because he had to wake up to pee and he didn't want to wake up his wife by turning on the light. So it can be very, very dangerous to have to wake up to urinate on so many levels.
But Doc, also in line with that questioning with the symptoms, one of two or more of those other questionnaires should they ask, what is my diagnosis? Or is this condition temporary or chronic in line with when they make a visit?
Everything in medicine, you have to determine the root cause and treat the root cause. And sometimes there's more than one cause. But common things are common. So when you reach a certain age, you're not going to inevitably diagnose someone just on a history that, oh, because they're 65 years old, they have an enlarged prostate, whether that's a benign enlargement, benign prostate hyperplasia, or malignant in terms of possible element of prostate cancer. It could be a urethral stricture. It can be onset of diabetes unknowingly, or poorly controlled diabetes where you have an element of an atonic neurogenic bladder where the nerves are not functioning, where you have something called diabetic cystopathy where you don't, the bladder doesn't contract fully to empty. The nerve endings to allow you to feel like when you have to pee are not functioning properly. All of those things can contribute to you having urinary issues. So it can be multifactorial. You can have issues where you can have Parkinson's. You can have multiple sclerosis. You have a neurological disorder. You can have a compressed nerve in your lower back, your lumbar spine, that can lead to constipation, or it can lead to incomplete bladder emptying. So just because you're not emptying your bladder doesn't have to be an obstructive cause. There are numerous non-obstructive causes, including pharmacological. If you have an alcohol binge, you've binged alcohol, that can put you temporary in urinary retention. If you have some of the over-the-counter flu meds, Sudafed, those things can also, for some persons, cause urinary retention. So it's not so straightforward in terms of why you're urinating frequently, why you might not be emptying your bladder, why you might be leaking urine and having an incontinence, or why you're waking up numerous times during the night. Some men, they cause their own problem by waking up in the night, because part of their routine to have a good night's sleep is to have 3 cups of strong black coffee before they go to bed. Then they wake up at 3 o'clock and they don't understand why they're staring at the ceiling and they have to wake up 1 hour on the hour to urinate. It's because the caffeine is diuretic and making them produce more urine and making them pee more urgently and more frequently. You want to avoid any caffeine, I would say, even after 4 p.m. And that includes tea, because caffeine, and in terms of its half-life and staying in your system, can be as long as 8 to 10 hours. So you can have a cup of strong coffee at 5 o'clock and have difficulty falling asleep at 1 a.m. And that in itself can also make you pee very frequently. So even when you do eventually fall asleep, you're going to have very disruptive sleep because you're waking up a lot in the night to urinate. Some medications you don't even necessarily need to be on. There are various forms of high blood pressure medication. Some of them can cause you to pee very frequently, very urgently, and you don't necessarily need to be on that class of medication that causes those symptoms. So just because you were prescribed something at one point in your life that you might have needed, it doesn't mean you, 5 years down the road, you need that same dose or that same medication. Or if that medication is causing you grievous, horrible side effects, it's possible that we can put you on another medication that still has, for example, your blood pressure well controlled, or still has your diabetes well controlled without the side effects.
All right, Doc, and my last question as a civilian that we should ask them, are there any tests that we need to take, or and why are they necessary?
So we always talk about know your numbers. Once you're 40 years old, or even as an adult, even going into your 20s, and because we have a high prevalence of diabetes, even as a preteen, you should have a HbA1c. That essentially tells you how your body deals with sugar over the last 3 months. So it's not just a random sugar that you take in the morning when you fasted. It actually tells you how your body is dealing with sugar. And it gives you a percentage, and it will determine whether you're pre-diabetic, if you're diabetic, if you're very poorly controlled diabetic. You should know that number. At any one time of year that you had the physical, for that 1 year, you should know what your HbA1c is. You should also know, once you're 40 years old or older, every single year, at least into the age of 75, what your PSA score is, and that's your prostate-specific antigen blood test. PSA is not going to diagnose prostate cancer. It's what we say, not a very sensitive or specific test, but it's an easy test for us to get. It's a relatively inexpensive test. So essentially, it weeds out those persons who might need more specific blood tests or might need more specific imaging to determine whether there's a likelihood of there being a lesion of concern in your prostate that may warrant a biopsy. But a PSA is not going to diagnose either whether you don't have cancer or whether you do have cancer, because as many as 15% of men who have prostate cancer actually have a normal PSA. That's why it's important to do a PSA velocity, looking at the change in your PSA value from 1 year to the next. If there's a tremendous rise, it doesn't necessarily mean cancer. It can be inflammation of the prostate, infection of the prostate in the form of prostatitis. It might be a urinary tract infection. It might be an enlarged, normal, benign prostate. It may be that you're not emptying your bladder, or more than one of those reasons. But you still need to do more specific blood tests or other testing if you have a high PSA velocity, where your PSA was 1 year and the next year it's 3. 3 is less than 4, so it's quote unquote normal, although it's a PSA is very age specific. So the normal for a 40-year-old is much lower than the normal for a 70-year-old. So you also have to put that into account as well. And there are certain medications that actually can artificially half your PSA value. So that will take, that'll completely discard the validity of PSA screening, looking for early prostate cancer, if you're not aware that a medication that's prescribed very, very commonly, it's called a 5-alpha reductase inhibitor in the form of either Avodart, which is dutasteride, or finasteride, or the trade names you might hear as Proscar, which is also prescribed in lower doses for hair loss, male pattern baldness and hair loss, male pattern baldness and hair loss. So if you take that medication for more than 6 months, it can potentially shrink your prostate. It can potentially combat male pattern baldness, but it also artificially halves your PSA. So if your value on finasteride or Avodart dutasteride after taking it for 6 months is a 3, it was actually 6. You might feel very confident that you have a normal value at 3, but 6 is above normal. It doesn't necessarily mean prostate cancer, but then we need to be more diligent and do more vigorous testing to determine that there is no likelihood of prostate cancer.
Well, I thought that was my last one, but this is my last question on that. But I have to bring this up because I know Bahamian men are always concerned about the sexuality of all of that. And so I think a lot of that has to do with them thinking how it affects them in their sexual manner. Is that fair to say that?
Very much so. So Bahamian man's identity, ego, is intertwined for the most part. You can never generalize, but the vast majority on their sexual prowess, their ability to achieve and maintain an erection no matter what age they have. So whatever they think can interfere with that, they're going to avoid. The big elephant in the room, and I've addressed this many times, is that the requirement for routine prostate cancer screening requires the dreaded digital rectal exam, which has embarrassing and homophobic connotations. And I've mentioned it many times, and you can, when you Google, obviously, I always meant, you know, you don't want ChatGPT to be your doctor. You don't want Google to be your doctor. Always look at reputable sources. And reputable sources would be such as the American Urology Association or the European Association of Urology, which are governing bodies that essentially put out protocols based on landmark studies that determine how a urologist should practice no matter where in the world they are. And the American Urology Association has stated, and you can Google this, that there is little to no role in the dreaded digital rectal exam in terms of routine prostate cancer screening. So don't be afraid of checking your prostate because you think you're going to have a homophobic digital rectal exam. You're not, and you shouldn't. In fact, there were a lot of commercials out in Great Britain, and they continue to have commercials out in terms of education, public service announcements, that there's no finger up the bum. That's actually the slogan, no finger up the bum for prostate cancer screening. But if you want to, this should be something to motivate men to get their prostate cancer screening, because number one, if you pick up prostate cancer early, your chance of survival is nearly 100%. There are very few cancers on earth you can say that. In fact, we can pick up prostate cancer so early in many cases that we can actively surveil someone until that disease, if ever, maybe it doesn't happen in their lifetime, becomes clinically relevant where we can easily cure them. But you can have 100% cure rate where you can get the trifecta, where you can maintain your erections, you're not going to have any urinary complications, and you can be in remission. That's the trifecta we aim for in prostate cancer. Again, the advantage of prostate cancer is you don't even necessarily need surgery to cure you 100%. You can have internal radiation. If you have external radiation, you can have HIFU, which is high-intensity focused ultrasound, which you heat and kill the cancer tissue. You can have cryotherapy, where you freeze the cancer. And if you do opt for surgery, it depends on the disease itself and the disease on the patient parameters and the pathology of the disease, the staging of the disease, etc. But you can opt for minimally invasive keyhole incision surgery, where you're up and about in 2 hours, home the next day like nothing happened.
Well, Doc, what we will do is we will change the discussion for a little bit on, and we'll now talk a little bit about alcoholism. I mean,
the plague of our society.
The plague of our society. Yes, yes. And as you and I were talking a little bit off before we came on radio, one of the things that I observe is the amount of alcohol or places we sell beverages and the amount of people who I believe drunk. I call them the waking drunk.
I mean, there are a predominance of men in our society who are functional, and not always functional, alcoholics. They use alcohol to drown their sorrows. They use alcohol for a confidence boost. They use alcohol to distract them from other issues in their life, to try to cope with a lot of deep-seated traumas of their life, or inadequacies or an unhappiness in their life. And it just basically magnifies their problem. They create a worse problem in many cases by becoming dependent on alcohol, which in itself is not only monetarily expensive, but the expense on our society, the expense on the individual and his career, on his marriage, on his relationships, on his children and in the family. It's a major tragedy that the Bahamian society is enduring in every other home.
Well, and the one thing I would say about that is I believe that our young men are really taking the brunt of that. If you look at our society and you look at the amount of them that are just on the side of the road, you could drive down Brewer Road and run into 5-6 of them walking, no clothes on, holding up their pants. We just have a sad situation going on with our men, and I think a lot of that either between alcohol and drugs.
We have 8-year-olds, 9-year-olds, 12-year-olds who drink every day. And that's unfortunately not uncommon at all.
Even in the schools?
Children go into school drunk.
Drunk, that's right. So we really have a major problem with that. I don't know how we're going to combat that before the entire nation is gone, but that is a major problem.
And we have a health crisis in terms of alcoholism, binge drinking, and driving under the influence of alcohol. I would hazard to guess, and I'm confident in saying that more than half of car accidents are related to excess alcohol intake, particularly on the weekends and at night. And then these same individuals don't even wear a seatbelt.
Well, Doc, that drives us into another component of that, of car driving, as you and I were talking about car driving and the way Bahamians drive. And one of the things that I was suggesting to you, but I really would want to suggest this, is that when people now go for their driver's license, they ought to take a psychological exam, because what we see on the streets and the way how people are driving, and especially in these self-drive cars, that in itself is a major health problem in terms of accidents and what goes on for in the hospital trying to cure people because they have been hurt by people driving in a very reckless way. Also, motorbike riding. People drive, the bikes were made to drive on two wheels. These guys are driving on one wheel.
With no helmet.
With no helmet.
And no insurance.
And no insurance.
And after being in Princess Margaret Hospital and surgery department for decades, the toll it takes in our society and on our public health system, on Princess Margaret Hospital, in terms of man hours, in terms of ICU beds, in terms of surgical operating time, in terms of just emergency staff being overwhelmed by car accidents, the onslaught is unfathomable, and it keeps happening, and it keeps getting worse. And there's no end in sight. We need to have seatbelt rules. There has to be some repercussions for not wearing a seatbelt. There have to be repercussions for driving under the influence. There are none.
Well, Doc, I should tell you, you know, we do have plenty of rules. Our problem is we have no one to enforce them. No one to, because the seatbelt rule is if you don't have a seatbelt on, the fine is $500. But how many people, I mean, if the government really wanted to put some money into the treasury, I mean, the guys who ride around on the motorbike alone with no helmet, the way that they can make a tremendous amount of money for the public treasury just from them alone. And driving around with people with no seatbelt on, cell phone, talking. I'm driving today. I'm trying to get someplace. And a lady, because she on the cell phone. I mean, these are all rules. If we just had someone to monitor, we would. I think the public treasury would make a lot of money.
Or even worse yet, the endangerment of children, where you have your two-year-old sitting in your lap and you're driving, or you have your four-year-old standing in the front seat while you're driving. It's a too common occurrence in this country.
Well, the other problem we have in our country, Doc, as we look at it, and I was reading, and as we go through these, what I call mental health issues, is again, we were talking so much again, we were talking about homelessness. You know, the amount of people, and even what I noticed in The Guardian today, the Minister of Health is talking about the amount of people that really have no place to live. We have a tremendous amount of people in our society that have no place to call home.
Rent has become sky high. Trying to own a house is almost unattainable for even a middle-class family.
Well, I you know, when I was growing up, you could have buy a piece of property for $6,000 or $8,000. Today, to buy a piece of property, and especially in an area that you want to live in, you're talking about $300,000, $400,000 just to buy the property, and you haven't even started to build the house yet. And so the question is, as I continue to look at it, how are many young Bahamians going to survive unless they move maybe out of Nassau and go into the family islands like Andros, where there's so much land, or other family islands? But to own a piece of property in New Providence is, wow, that calls for tremendous savings. Or I don't know what you need to do to get a piece of property at this stage in your life now.
I mean, we're top 10 in the world in terms of the cost of living. So we have some of the greatest pressures that any human being can have on this face of the earth. It's terrible.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things that another ill that affects us is, we were talking about, is also the sexual offenders. People who, I saw Dr. Sandra Dean Patterson on the in the newspaper today talking that we should not, let the register be known, because people could go into what they, take on what they call vigilante justice. How do you feel about that?
We need to value our children. We need to have our children and allow them to live a safe life without being preyed upon by predators who get a slap on the wrist, who women are not valued in this society, where you get given 7 years for rape. It's insulting. It's insulting to the female gender. It's insulting to our children. Children are our future. We need to protect our children. We need to, if it means life imprisonment, in my opinion, if you're a sexual predator, you should never come out.
Well, you know, I was looking at a clip today, and one of the gentleman who was narrating the clip, he talked about, if someone tells you no, we really don't even need to have a discussion on what the word no means. No means no. Where no comes from, your wife or your significant other or anyone else. If someone tells you no, it means no.
Yes.
What don't you understand about no?
I mean, it's leads to a lack of respect for men in general, for women in our society. And that goes to young men in our junior high schools who try and molest their classmates without any repercussions whatsoever. It's just a lack of respect. There are women to this day who refuse to go to Junkanoo because they know in the crowds of Bay Street they're going to be molested without any repercussions whatsoever. This is a society that doesn't respect women, and that's one of the greatest ills of our society as well.
Well, you know, Doc, one of the things about Bahamian men, and that causes them a problem, is that they are very what I call touchy-feely. I have this incident. I remember going to, was either Washington or Canada with a Junkanoo group, and one of the guys, touched a female, wasn't one of our females. But that became a very, very tenuous and a problem, because our Bahamian men, they're very touchy-feely. They can't just say hello to you. They have to touch you. And when you go to countries outside of the Bahamas, it don't happen like that.
Yes.
And that's something that they don't, maybe they don't understand, or they don't learn that you cannot be touching females if you're not in our country. That's a no-no.
You have to learn to respect boundaries even at a young age. We have a lot of antisocial behavior in our society. That's running rampant as well. You don't have respect for people on the streets in terms of the way you drive. You don't have respect for pedestrians. You don't have respect for persons' possessions. If you see something in somebody's yard, you just take it. If you see a purebred dog in somebody's yard, you'll jump the fence and steal it. We need to have respect for each other. And that'll mean a stronger society. When you have crime running rampant, that's degrading the quality of life for every member of this nation.
Well, I was talking to a lady today, and I'm an elderly lady, and she called me and she said, someone stole my gas tank. And I had to sympathize with her, because she's saying, and to buy a new gas tank, it costs over $500. But someone stole my gas tank, and now I can't cook. And these, you know, people are just walking around taking things that do not belong to them.
We are professional criminals. And we're a country under siege. We're a country under siege. There's no denying that. We're battened down in our own homes. We're afraid to go out and even enjoy the beauty of the beaches because of being held up or accosted. We're afraid to go out in the night to dinner because we might be held up, as the entire restaurant might be held up by men with guns who are never caught. And if they are, they're given bail within months and nothing ever happens with the case. So there have to be repercussions. We need to have a stronger judicial system. We need to have stronger and more stringent laws put in place to punish these criminals, because they know that there is no punishment. If you know that if you're going to do something, you're going to get 25 years in life, you're going to think twice about doing it. But here, they know they'll never go to court. If they go to court, they're going to get bail. That case is rarely going to go before a judge.
Well, one of the problems with that, Doc, is, you know, we're not a what I call a well audit society. We are undisciplined. We tend to do whatever we want with no repercussion. People, you know, just don't, they don't respect the law. And you watch what you watch. Again, I always bring up, you watch what happens in our school, what happens in the workplace. I was at my office today, and some workers were out there, and I mean, they were just cursing at the top of their, I mean, the profanity that was going on with among about seven or eight people. I mean, I thought they were speaking another language, because no one spoke with anything that you could understand, except every word was a curse word.
It's a very sad indictment on our society. As I said, there's a lot of antisocial behavior, a lot of disrespect for our fellow man. But the number one killer in this country is not guns. It's table salt. It's unhealthy eating. It's a poor diet. It's a sedentary lifestyle. It's the hypertension that's killing us. It's the cardiovascular disease that's killing us. Far more than the motor vehicle accidents, far more than even cancer, far more than obviously even violence and murder. It's what we're doing to ourselves. It's our unhealthy choices. It's our living and sustaining ourselves on carbohydrates and bountiful portions of carbohydrates, whether it's macaroni and cheese and potato salad and peas and rice and crab and rice. Our reliance on red meat every day or every other day. Or we start our morning with bacon and fried sausage. It's our unhealthy living. It's table salt that's killing us, and our unhealthy diet. It's not the guns. It's not the motor vehicle accidents. We have a call coming in. Good evening. This is Urologist Speaks. Go ahead. Good evening.
Hello.
Yes. Hello. Go ahead.
Yes. Good evening, Dr. Pintado. Good evening, and also good evening to your guests in studio.
Good evening, sir. Good evening.
I normally listen to your show every Wednesday, but I'll call him. But I have to call this evening, because when I listen to what some of the Palestinians have to say from the crisis center, I said I couldn't believe it, because he's trying to compare the Bahamas with those other jurisdictions, whether it's the United States, England, or wherever. Don't say that you are not prepared to protect the vulnerable among us, because we have a small society, and you need to think about the people who continue to offend these young children in our community is being protected. I find that to be so ridiculous. I hardly can think about words to describe that. It is unbelievable that someone who said that they had the crisis center could come up with that kind of formula. How do you arrive at that?
Well, I would agree. Everybody has a varying point of view, and that's why it's so beautiful to have a democracy. But I agree. The purpose of a sex registry is to have public awareness, so that we are aware as parents, as teachers, as neighbors, as church members, who amongst us we need to be wary of. And if we're not going to make that public, then what's the purpose of the sex registry? It has little to no value in my mind.
Yeah, my thing is that I differ with that substantially, because that kind of remark from someone who had the crisis that, who knows about the crisis that we had, poison from persons making reports to the persons in the crisis that arrive at that conclusion is just more than mind watering.
Well, I think she needs to expound on her statements, and I'm sure she's a woman who's dedicated her life. I know her for decades. She's dedicated her life to trying to protect the disenfranchised, the young among us, the children, the women who have been beaten and disregarded. So I think we shouldn't be too stern and strong in our wording of her one statement. I understand where she's coming from one aspect, but she's the one person that we need to admire because she's dedicated her life to protecting those who are victims of abuse.
So Doc, you would agree, you would think then that it is better than for the sex registrar to be known as not to be known.
It has to be made public.
It must be made public.
I think that's the primary purpose of it. We need to be aware as a public. And if you don't want to have your name on that and be a possible victim or have repercussions because of it, or then you know what? Don't sexually abuse anybody. Maybe that'll be a demotivator in itself.
Well, that's her concern, that if we make it known, we will have too much vigilante justice in the country. That also becomes a problem.
We already have vigilante justice. When persons who murder your family or are let out, we already have drive-by shootings. We already have good people who become murderers because of the failings of our judicial system. So maybe we should start by having these sexual predators never come out, or getting 40 years instead of 2 years for raping a 2-year-old or raping 6 5-year-olds and getting 5 years in prison, where all they're going to, and they're never going to get a job. They're going to be on the fringe of society, and they're always going to be a harm to our society. So you know what? We need to be proactive and prevent persons at all possible from becoming sexual predators. That starts with education. That starts with the church. That starts with, a lot of times, predators are preyed upon themselves. So they were abused at one point, and they become abusers. So let's stop that dead in its tracks. And if somebody's an abuser, lock them away. And let's stop having them having dozens of victims who themselves grow up to become predators themselves.
Well, when you look at it, Doc, I mean, and you know, we were talking about it again. I mean, the incest that happens also with fathers molesting their daughters. I've been reading so many stories about, I think just today, where a young lady was having a child for her father. I mean, we have such what I call sickness going on. I don't know how you prevent something like that, and especially when it happens in your own home.
It's prevalent in the society throughout the decades, where mothers, grandmothers, aunts essentially pimp out their own young daughters, nieces, granddaughters for money. Whether it's turning a blind eye, and I don't know what kind of eye that is, a godless eye, to a 7-year-old man coming to pick up your 15-year-old after she changes out of her uniform because he's going to pay the rent for you. That's pimping your own daughter, and there's a special place in hell for those people. But it's prevalent in this society where women are raised to get what they can get from men, and they use their body to do that, and they never know what true love is. They never know what respect for themselves becomes. So one man is paying the rent, one man's paying the light bill, one man's paying for the car loan. We're pimping our own daughters out, and we're degrading a whole section of our nation of young women. And that there are no repercussions for it. We need to bring the mothers before the court, because they allow the molesting. They allow the statutory rape to go on right under their noses. They allow the boyfriend to come in drunk and have sexual relations with a 12-year-old because they don't want to lose that income that comes in. And that happens all the time. I know police officers, I know prosecutors, I know persons who are in the crisis center. It is so rampant, it'll sicken you to the point I will have to question, are we even a Christian nation?
Yeah, you're so right about that. And I know for fuck.
With so many demons, are we really a Christian nation?
Yeah.
Where there are no consequences for these demons, are we truly a Christian nation?
Well, you know, the thing is, when you go and you report to the police, I mean, is there anything really done to research and to investigate these matters. I know of a lot of them that just go under the table. You don't hear anything about it anymore.
I mean, it reaches a point where what are you going to do? It's so rampant. Are you going to lock everybody up? We need to stop it dead in its tracks, and we need to make examples of our worst offenders, and we need to stop these predators becoming predators, and we need to stop this whole culture of essentially, and you can agree with me, pimping out your own child.
Okay, we
prostituting your own child.
Prostituting, yes, absolutely.
The virtue of your child should be something that you hold with the greatest of regard, and no matter what, you need to protect it. You don't just sell it out for monetary gain. I'd rather a man, I'll have greater respect for a woman or a man who goes to bed hungry or eats one meal a day or has three jobs than to go and pimp out your own daughter or son.
I was just going to mention, it's not only the daughters, the sons and all too. I mean, both sides of the fences here.
Yes.
I mean, really.
They're 8-year-old boys who are living a tortured hell.
Yeah.
A tortured hell. And they want to know who is going to protect. And we as a God-fearing nation need to protect our young, not to turn a blind. And it's happening more and more. And it's becoming so common that we just don't have any reaction to it anymore.
Well, I think we've become very, very cool as a nation by that is, because as long as it's not happening to your kid or your child, or it's not happening to you, it's really not my concern, because that's not happening within my whole soul. So people are not concerned about it until it really hits home to them, and then they become concerned.
I mean, this whole, it's unsustainable. Our society is going to continue to be fractured. We need to weed out the demons in our society. We need to weed out the demons, and there are far too many demons in our homes. And there are far too many parents, whether you're mother, father, or both, allowing demons into your home and turning a blind eye in the dead of night, or even in the broad daylight.
But one of the things that I have proposed is we need a national parenting program. We have too many young people having children, and they have no idea of how to grow them. And so we need it. In our country, we need some sort of a national parenting program that can teach young mothers to be mothers. That is something that we definitely need.
I mean, education is the most powerful weapon which you can use to change the world, to change the Bahamas. And there's always going to be a light. If only we are brave enough to see it, if only we are brave enough to be it, to be that light, we can create innumerable lights, hundreds of lights, thousands of lights in the darkness of our society.
Wow. Well, Doc, you know, getting back to, I want to get back to a little bit about this.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, the most important motivator for a Bahamian man is to keep his erections. How are you going to keep your erections? Erections are basically how well is your body functioning? How healthy are you?
Yeah.
So then you need to be healthy if you want to keep your erections. There's a strong link, a correlation between cardiovascular disease and heart disease and erectile dysfunction. And they share the same risk factors, whether it's undiagnosed diabetes or hypertension or obstructive sleep apnea or hypercholesterolemia or obesity. Obesity is another major issue for men in this country. We're talking about men today, but as a society as a whole, but obesity is killing our society as well.
Well, do we have too much fast food entities in our country?
It's choices. Just because we look here, we're at Guardian Radio in Oaksville, across from University of Bahamas, just because we can probably walk 5 minutes in every direction and find 10 different places we can buy alcohol, we have the choice to buy it or not to buy it. And these alcohol establishments won't be so plentiful if they didn't have patronage, if we didn't, they didn't make money. So we have choices. So even though we have a lot of fast food establishments, doesn't mean it has to be part of your daily meal. We have choices.
Well, you know, Doc, I'm guilty of that. I mean, when you go there, I mean, fast food now, in order to survive, really, that's the only thing you could afford. Because if you go into the grocery store and you look at your grocery bill and you're trying to eat healthy, I mean, that's a very, very difficult and challenging, you know, with the funds you have.
I think food is expensive across the board, whether you go into food store. I think if you have a healthy meal that you can make and even have leftovers tomorrow, it'll be a lot less expensive. And not only we talk about the expense of that moment, less expensive in the future in terms of preventing health disorders, diseases, diabetes, hypercholesterolemia, obstructive sleep apnea, affecting you professionally, affecting you socially, reducing the quality of your life, reducing the number of years on this earth. We pay for it in many ways. So just because it's fast and easy doesn't mean it's going to be an easy solution to our life. It causes more problems, just as alcohol. You may feel that, all right, alcohol soothes your depression, your anger, your despair, helps you get through a difficult moment, but it causes more problems. It makes a multitude of new problems.
What you're saying is absolutely true. But a young mother who's living day to day, most of our people, I could tell you for a fact, they go to the food store every day to buy something.
Let's be preventative.
Yeah.
Let's prevent so many single mothers who have 5, 6, 7 children to raise on their own. Let's have parenting classes. Let's have marital classes. Let's have social interaction classes. Let's try to bring back the nuclear family as a unit to make our nation stronger. If you got a mother and a father providing a living and bringing income into the family, you're going to have a better future for the child. You're going to have a better future for the Bahamas. But when you have single mothers who barely have time to raise their children because they're trying to make ends meet with their 2 and their 3 jobs and sleepless nights and everything else and tearing out their hair, trying to help 5 children with homework and everything else, and no one gets their attention that they need, why don't we have families that, you know what, let's have a nuclear family where they have 2 children and we have a more fruitful Bahamas?
Well, you know, Doc, again, that's another health problem that we have. We have too many families with only the mother. There is no father, and I'm...
Well, we talk about men. We're addressing men. How many young men in this country are cold and heartless? They have no love for anyone, not even themselves. They don't care about women. If they get them pregnant, that's not their problem. They don't care about anything but themselves. They don't believe in love. They don't believe in giving anybody their heart. That in itself is just as destructive as diabetes.
But Doc,
we have a nation of men who don't care about anything other than having 6 girlfriends at one time, or wearing as a badge of honor that they have 20 women that they got pregnant and don't care for one child.
But it goes back again to the point, how can you give love if you've never experienced it?
That's a problem.
Yeah.
So we need to teach love.
You know, a young father who has never been told, I love you.
That's not an excuse. Maybe you should take that negative and turn into a positive. If you never had love, then you'd be the best father on earth. If your father was never be there for you, then you know what? You'd be there in abundance for your one child. We have a call coming in. This urologist speak. Good evening.
Yes, sir. Good evening.
Go ahead, sir.
Yes. You know, I hear you talk about the nuclear family, right?
And yes.
The family of 2. I put it to you, no matter how large the family is, there's greed in this country, right?
Yes.
There's, you know, we have an economy, a tourist economy, that's a service economy that requires maids and gardeners. You understand me? And you see the low pay. You understand what I'm saying?
I do.
This is the issue. And then when you talk about a nation with families of two. So that's not enough people for this economy that we that whatever the economy we choose, you know, we need people. You know, we need large families. You know, the nuclear family. You know who has the nuclear family? The people who educated, the people who gonna afford ten. Who come from families of ten where their father was not educated but made was able to send them off to school in the private school.
Well, I go back to this being one of the 10 most expensive countries in the world with the highest cost of living. So if you can afford 3, 4, or 5 children, more power to you, and that's what you wanted, that's fine. But for many of us, 2 is all we can afford. So this hour has gone very quickly. We've gone through a lot of topics. We're trying to emphasize men's health in this month of June for Men's Health Awareness Month. What are your closing remarks, Mr. Calvin Green?
My closing remarks, Doc, as a civilian, is to encourage my civilian population to see the doctor as quickly and as much as possible. Get your yearly visit and your prostate check. Thank you.
I'd like to say, let's do better, Bahamas. Let's be better, Bahamas. Let's do better for ourselves. And let's pay attention to our health, not only physical health, but emotional, spiritual, and psychological. We want better for our country. Have a very safe and fruitful week, Bahamas. This is Urologist Speaks with Bahamian urologist Dr. Gregory Pinto and my co-host, Mr. Calvin Green. Good night. Control you.